This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and this afternoon I'm joined by Superintendent Oskey and Chairman of the School Board, Travis Pearson. Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thank you so very much for spending some time talking to me. At last night's board meeting, the board voted unanimously on a motion, and that was, and I'll read it out here now, to direct the superintendent to move forward to revise the Johnson County School District number 1 graduation requirements and all policies connected with the graduation requirements. Now, that's both quite specific, but also quite vague. Travis, what does that decision mean? It was unanimously voted on by the board. What does this really trigger?
So the superintendent has suggested we reduce the graduation requirements from 28 credits at BHS down to 24. But there, every single policy that affects graduation, from how many math classes and PEs, all of these things now have to be looked at. So as the board last night said, we like the suggestion, we want you to follow through with that. But until it's in policy, the board hasn't done anything. We only govern through the policies that we issue and agree upon. And so really last night we said, please start a policy investigation and bring to us all of the ones that we need to change and update to get this back to a more current.
So you've only been on the school board for a couple of years,
yes.
But are you aware of the history to this process? How has this decision and this recommendation from the superintendent come about?
Well, we've been studying this issue since, I think it was 2015 when it began, and we've got histories of investigations and people trying to evaluate what would be the best way for us to schedule our time at high school and get the most out of it for our students. And then we've had bumps on the road and COVID came along and some things interrupted the study. But the school as a district has been studying this for years.
I think that may come as quite a surprise to some people. And what was the original thought that prompted that question?
So I guess I can come back. So just looking at the history, Travis and I are not going to be able to speak to that. But, you know, I think it all did come around the focus of high school activities. So the calendar was what started in 2015, a 5-day week or a 4-day week. Okay. And a lot of those conversations were, you know, are kids out of school? What are we doing? What is our schedule? So when we say back in 2015 and then back in 2019, there's always been a concern, I think, around kids being exhausted. Is it a 5-day week? Is it a 4-day week? What is better as we go through that? Then some processes started and asking, okay, what about the BHS schedule? Okay, so then that became the focus. And if you look at the research, I think it was probably back in 2019 where that became the focus for a little bit. But then in 2021, in March of 2021, BHS staff recommended to the Board of Trustees, that gave them two options, but their number one recommendation was a trimester. That was voted down 8-1, but their second option was a 7-period day. So in that process, it was change in leadership right after that. So after it was voted down by the board, which Travis wasn't on the board at that time, and neither was I as the superintendent, I came on board July 1st of that year of 2021. Well, as an extension of that, the Board of Trustees at that point in time said, hey, we want to know what high-performing school districts are doing in the state of Wyoming, and what are the identifiers and what you're doing. That's when we, so it wasn't opinionated. The board allowed me to hire Mitch Kraft to do, as a consultant, to do a study of high, consistently. I want to bring back the key word, not somebody that's going up and down, consistently high-performing districts in the state of Wyoming. And through that research, we also wanted to do demographics. We wanted to try to compare ourselves to districts our size or similar, that we have a high school here in Buffalo and a high school in KC. So we did a lot of demographics just to come around that. And then we also wanted to start looking at school districts that we always quote think we're like, you know, because we're in 3A. So where's a Douglas? Well, Douglas and a Powell, you know, they're 500 to 700 students more than us. So that funding and demographics are a lot different. So just kind of evaluating that. Well, through that study, and then still processing through COVID, because that was still, we had another year of COVID, but Mitch did the study. Then we came back as a board. Travis was coming on. we continued to do, okay, what does that mean? That was also the shift from a, my expectations at that time was every kid, every day in a core class meets with their core teacher because the block schedule was alternating. The data showed that kids would miss one day, so they're missing an entire week of school. So we shifted to what you heard building leadership say. They switch classes, so they're meeting every day, which then led to a shift from a block schedule to an eight-period schedule.
So that, to be clear, that means that there were all classes were the same time duration.
Yep.
You didn't have a longer class some days and a shorter class
other days. Those at-risk kids were getting help every day, where they're in front of their teacher every day. And then we went on a tour, because part of it is always not hearing the data, but we wanted to go see. So we divided up in teams. Half of us went to Powell, half of us went to Thermopolis. And then the following day we came back because we wanted to look at what those schools were. Powell and Thermopolis both have been known as PLCs, but it was also one of those things that's separating by saying, okay, what similarity? So as teams, we went and visited, we came back. Buffalo High School actually took some of the things that they learned and implied them this year. However, it was still, we weren't to the point, what are those expectations? And one of the identifiers that came out of those districts that they're so successful consistently, the key word is, I want to use the word consistently, is because they have policies that allow them to be flexible with educational change and challenges. You have to remember, Wyoming accountability changes all the time. We're being held accountable. So since 2017 with YTOP and our student performance data, all of that has changed. Well, it's not just about what they're doing, but it's about what else do they have? And some of that policies that allow the flexibility to change. Well, one of the key indicators that we learned, or I identified and brought to the board, was we are substantially higher in credit requirements for graduation compared to other districts, which then got me thinking and working with the board is, why do we have 150 plus kids that, you know, are homeschooled, private school, and so on? Well, we're a competing, in this day and age, we're not the only show in town for public education. So when our credits for graduation are substantially higher than our competition, okay, it takes that focus of, oh, look at high-performing school districts are here. Our competition is here. My recommendation is several folds on based on, okay, we've got to have policy or allow us to be competitive. And then we throw in the financial piece. That's where the financial piece came into, okay, if we're going to truly do what they're able to do, then we have to start flexing and being able to say through attrition, which everybody's seen the data, our enrollment decline is where it is allows us to be flexible. I want to be very careful. I know I've said a lot here and I'll let Travis talk more. This just sets a bar. Doesn't mean we can't do more if we have the funding to do it. It just levels the playing field with some of our competition. This is what they offer, and staying within our means and allowing us to flex as a district without major change, because we know how much everybody loves change and it's hard, is it's going to allow us to flex and adapt with what we project will be some changes that need to happen, not only as a district, but overall in public education in the state of Wyoming.
So to be clear, the underlying driving force, the thread that ran through all these different reviews and explorations of what our school district was doing in comparison to others around the state, was really to notch us up to a higher performing standard.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Start of the quest.
And that was where it's meandered through different iterations according to circumstances and other things. But
all things in
budget
education.
Is a critical piece of this. So it's not budget that's necessarily driving this decision. It's a desire to get us to higher up the scoreboard compared to other districts in the state.
It's about having the flexibility to be competitive enough to be that high-performing district.
And okay, so can you explain why flexibility equals that?
Okay, so when you have policy that restricts your ability to adjust with potential funding decreases because you have to offer a larger menu, all right, that's where some of the flexibility comes in, is how do you meet the, how do you, if you have a smorgasbord of 30 opportunities that you have to provide financially, okay, that costs money.
It takes a certain number of people to provide that many.
And in those smorgasbords, those positions have to be highly qualified, highly certified, and it doesn't allow you that flexibility to adjust and really come back to what is our absolute needs, essentials. It's not what we want, it's what we absolutely need for the best interest of our kids in the county. That's where some of that flexibility comes in.
So can you put a dollar sign to what a reduction in credits actually means in terms of budget?
Not yet, but 2 years from now.
So why
because
do
I'm,
do that
I'm because we have to flex, and I'll answer that question. Mm. The flex has to come with every teacher is at a different level of pay scale. Okay, so to put an exact number to that, but that's what that staffing initiative shows you. That staffing initiative shows you when people ask, "What do other districts do?" So we assign staff in the elementary for K-1-2-3 based on a 1 to 18 ratio, and 3 through 6 on a 1 to 20 ratio. That tells me that's where we start doing that. But when you get to the high school, you can't have a formula that the policy doesn't allow you to adapt, and it comes back to classroom size. However, I can give you a dollar number that we need to meet to. If we want to become a competitive district with our base salary and get to, it's not the highest, it's probably still the lowest, but we want to get over 50,000 and get to 51,000. And have a competitive base for our classified, that's $1.9 million to do that. Well, that $1.9 million, if 80% of your budget is salaries and benefits, means that you have to find a magic number. So if you talk insurance and you want to talk some things, I can give you a number district-wide. It's probably about what we reference as full-time equivalent employees, FTEs, of probably about 10. All right, is going to help us move the needle in that direction, but it still doesn't mean we're going to meet the goal.
So what proportion of the whole the district's entire budget is spent on salaries?
80%.
80%. And how do we compare to comparable districts across the state in terms of our teachers'
so
salaries?
A typical goal for districts, how do we compare for salaries?
Yes.
We're the lowest.
And is that true for teachers and administrators and principals and so on? Is that across the board?
We've been working to get those others up, but yeah, I would say on the low average for all of. But teachers definitely were. We worked on classified. We work on administrators, and now our biggest funding piece is our teachers. That's what we need to get up.
There would seem to be an intuitive argument that you would attract better teachers by paying more. Yes. Is that true?
Absolutely, it is.
And we've seen that in applications. I've heard that when we posted job openings in years past, we would get 100 applications. Now we're lucky to get 3.
And you can attribute that to pay scale. I mean, we know that there are other attendant problems that are outside the school district's control, which, for example, is the opportunity for a spouse or partner's employment here in our community, or whether you can find affordable place to live and so on. But
yes.
But we do know that the paucity in salary compared to what other districts may be offering has a direct impact on the quality of our teachers. And ergo, the quality of teacher would then impact the quality of the result.
Absolutely.
Of the education.
True.
And just to put it this way, there is absolutely, and I'll be honest, because then you're going to start crossing the pendulum that if you increase the salaries too much and you increase class sizes too much, you're going to have a negative impact. So got to find that balance of what that looks like.
There's a sweet spot.
You got to be able to open the door to at least gain interest and then tell them about all the great things. And as that recruiting tool happens, but in the meantime, we got to at least be at the table to say, look at, we might not be the highest in the district, but we're close, and look at the benefits that we have.
So when you say high, you're talking about salary.
Yes.
So how are you going to get to that higher salary? And does that mean that everybody who's already in the district, their salaries would raise too?
Yes.
It has to, yes.
Yep. So when you say that $1.9 million, that means even our veteran teachers and everybody. So to raise the base includes that's a shift all the way across the salary schedule.
So we've wandered a long way from credit reduction to staff salary increase.
But it ties.
But it's all interlinked, okay. And that's what we found on our end study too.
And I hope we can explain why that is the case.
You want to connect the dots.
Yes, please.
Okay, so connecting the dots again comes back to, we have got to be competitive with our competitors, all right? That's not only keeping kids and parents, and saying here is, look at, this is what we offer. This is what our requirements. We're seeing other districts, because that was the question is, how do their salaries get to where they are? Well, class sizes go up because the same formula applies to us that applies in those districts. You can only increase salaries based on the number of teachers you have within that pot of money, right?
In terms of incoming dollars and how the state.
The more teachers you have, the less you can spread.
So there's a notion that larger class sizes are poorer, that you want more individual, the smaller your class size, the more individual attention you can get. But that doesn't seem to be true. That's contraindicated by the fact that you have high performing schools with larger classes.
Yes.
What is the magic there?
It comes back to what we're talking about, personnel. It comes back to quality instruction, recruiting and retaining the best. So if we're going to recruit the best, you want to know what some of the key factors are. First of all, it's collaboration, but it's about the quality of instructor that you put in. So that recruiting and retaining piece, which comes back to that financial piece. So there's some research out there that says, class size matters. Don't get me wrong. At a certain point in time, class size does engulf, you know, the quality of education, because it probably turns into more classroom management and babysitting and what that looks like. But we also did this in Gold, Wyoming. South Dakota, with where they're at, some of their K-1, 2's class sizes are at 25. Okay, we're still at the 16, so we're there. But again, that pool of money doesn't change. If we're staying 78 to 82% is kind of where the average is. That pot of money, you divide it up, you can divide it up among 100 employees, or you can divide it up among 88 employees. And if it's at a lower number of employees, that means you're giving more of a portion. So we as an entire district, not just our certified staff, and everybody says, well, you're just focusing on the certified. We've been doing this with classified already. We've been doing it in the elementary. Elementary's reduced classes. The reality is, this isn't just one school that we're focusing on. This is a district-wide initiative. All right. Our elementaries went from a 1 to 16 ratio to a 1 to 18 to a 1 to 20. Our middle school has reduced. Our high schools, again, we're limited with our policy. So how do we find what our needs are? And then how do you justify low numbers in classes when we're already, here's another factor that nobody takes into consideration is, and this is awesome, I love it, but concurrent and dual enrollment classes are now another recruiting. I mean, a lot of kids take that. So that's competing with your elective classes, your non-required state classes. I mean, what we offer now is phenomenal. But we as a district have to be able to say, we need to live within our means. All right. Activities, when I first got here, we were paying 200% over the model. We were getting $600,000 for activities and spending $1.2 million. Okay, guess where that extra $600,000 came out of? The general budget. Now we're at 125, 130% over the model. So when people start saying, what have you already done? We've tried to limit the least amount of impact, but now we're starting to look into policy that impacts us from making the changes we need. But we also, I got to come back and say, we've also done our due diligence and the board has supported that. High-performing schools are doing the same thing that we're asking, that I'm asking the board to do with this recommendation. My question is, I don't want to be a copycat. I want to be better than them.
Yes.
And so if they're functioning on this and they're able to pay teachers and they're being successful, not only in the academic world, but one of the districts we're looking at is also very successful in the athletic world. They're very competitive, because they're one of our competitors, that it can be done. So it does come back to the community, the schools, the parents, and the students, reminding ourselves we can do this, and it is already demonstrating being done. We just have to open the, open and be innovative on how to get there.
Okay, I have a huge number of questions that come from that. So okay. I think, first of all, if we want to learn from high-performing schools, that notion of we don't need to invent the wheel, it's been invented, let's learn by others and adapt to our own individual and unique circumstances and culture and so on. What was it that when you went to these other schools, you learned that you took away that you can bring back that you felt was transferable back into Johnson County?
First of all, they're PLC schools.
Okay, can you describe what that means?
Community,
yes.
Is what it means.
Professional learning community.
Yes.
Okay, they're very strong. They've been doing that for 10 to 12
years. And just maybe quickly describe, I know you have done to me before, Charles, but what for people who aren't familiar
well,
with the
Travis,
PLC?
Travis knows a lot.
PLC, so how does it work?
So the professional learning communities include time scheduled every day for teachers to collaborate and go work together to see how are we performing and how can we do better? Are we measuring the same things? Are we measuring the right things? Then we say, what do we want the students to know in this class? What is it we're asking them to learn? The next question is, how do we know if they learned it? And then if they learned it, how do we take that farther and teach them more? If they didn't learn it, how are we going to come back and make sure that they've got this before we ever move on to the next chapter or section?
And that is a model across Johnson County School District now, correct?
In the last 2 years.
In the last 2 years.
We started that journey.
And so we're in our second year. How long do you think it takes to see fruits from that?
From all of our interviews, it was somewhere between 8 years, and they're still refining and learning to do it better. So eight years was kind of everybody's...
Okay,
you'll invest so this much time.
There's an investment to be made. So we've begun that piece. PLCs, as you say, you know, I mean, that sort of unique, consistent snapshot into what is happening, and rather than catching it at the end of a semester and trying to correct.
Absolutely.
Is that the point? What else did you see?
Consistency. It's a district-wide model. If we're seeing it, the board believed in it, the superintendent believes in it, it's a belief system that's actually embedded in the community.
And consistency in what?
We're going to evaluate data. There's a specific time during your work day, not outside of class hours, that we evaluate our data, see how our performance is, and make any changes we see. And then if students need additional help, we get them that help immediately instead of waiting till the end of the semester and say, oh, repeat that class. We're going to catch that real fast and make sure they stay on target.
And so that is currently implemented and in place across all our schools.
So I can say after the first year, there was no district-wide PD. That maybe there have been before, but there's no plan.
PD, professional development.
Professional development is where it is. We have been consistent over the last 2 years with our PLC institutes. It's an expectation from building to building. Another thing that is good practice is every year there's a school improvement plan. It used to be you only did school improvement plans if you weren't meeting state expectations. It's an expectation. So it really starts from the board down. If you want to talk about that piece, that's what it is. It's a true belief. Here's another thing. It's about interventions and enrichments. So you looked at all these high-performing schools and where they're at. Is there intervening, like what Travis said, with these professional learning communities? Is the four essential questions, what do we want kids to know? And if they're not learning it, what are we doing to grow?
So what are we actually assessing there, though? Is it just state schools, you know, YTOP testing or whatever? What are we?
No, so it's a formative assessment. So that's why we align our curriculum and our assessments to the standards. So what are we assessing? We're assessing what we're teaching every day.
And it varies literally from every class and every subject. So,
but what we're teaching every day should be aligning to the state standards, but it's not based just on YTOP. If you were to go to the elementary and look at the different literacy groups that they have and how they're identifying kids, and they're moving subgroups sometimes on a weekly basis or daily basis to identify where they're. So it's not just one snapshot in time. It's an ongoing, constant evaluation.
And but I got to jump on that one for just a second. I was able to go down and sit through as the teachers in our elementary did this. They went through every student. How is that student performing at reading this week? And they said, okay, this student has these needs. We'll send them to this classroom for reading hour. These students are performing real high. We need to push them harder. They will go to this classroom. But they're literally customizing an individual reading program for every student in the building and getting them the help that they require, because some of them are really good at phonics and some of them need help there. We take those to the right room and get them that help. It's that snapshot across every class in the district.
So the picture you're seeing and we painted now is this professional learning community philosophy, which is adapted to us. I mean, we adapt it, we make it ours. but it's still the essential questions. And then you've seen consistency from the top down. These are expectations. And then you've seen the focus on the data piece, but really identifying and providing interventions for kids, catching them early and finding enrichment or giving time. Sometimes an enrichment is no more than time, because we know that sometimes kids would love to have their work done so they don't have to do it at home. Take anything, right? What are we doing to provide time and break that down? But then there's that sustainability. We also seen in districts, you've had leadership and focus from the board. So there's been a constant philosophy for, like Travis said, 8 to 12 years. Okay. Any type of research will show you the more consistent you can be and adapt to the changes. Here's a key figure. Even though they haven't changed their belief systems, their educational challenges have been the same as ours, but they've been able to adapt. So what's causing that to adapt? What is that piece? Where did we find that balance? So those are some key components that came out of that.
So I'd like to come back to this 28 to potentially 24 credit issue. The proposal is that your recommendation, Superintendent, was that this would come in play and in 4 years' time, that would be the graduation requirement that was 24. Now that, I think there's an intuitive response amongst parents maybe who wince slightly and say, well, less credits, that's got to be worse. You know, my child is not going to be as well prepared to compete and even to sustain themselves in whatever comes next after high school. Do you have a response to that?
I'm going to say that's absolutely false, because one of the things we looked at when we say high-performing districts, those communities, those cultures, and those kids are doing quite well after school, so they're well-prepared. So being prepared is a choice, and it comes back to what we're providing, and that's where we kind of flex with some of that piece. But you even look at colleges. What we're requiring kids to do, even at a college level, 8 different classes. There's not many kids that at a college level that are taking 8 different courses at once. So in some of that reality is we are doing that. We're probably the busiest district in the state of Wyoming when 85% of our kids are involved in activities, mm-hmm. plus they're taking on 8 classes. There's a real sense out there that kids are getting burned out. Stress levels are high. And let's not just talk about the kids. Let's talk about the parents that are trying to support their kids being as involved. I mean, there's a lot of stress to supporting that. So sometimes finding that balance. But I would challenge anybody to go to Sheridan 2, Sheridan 1, Powell, some of those others. Those kids are being very successful out of school also with how they're prepping with the same thing. And it's not necessarily taking things away. And again, it's allowing us to, we're going to have to make choices. I'm not going to blow off parents or you or anybody else. Living within our means and giving up something should be something that's driven by what we actually need and not driven by policy because we have to say we offer this. That's part of what this is allowing parents and the schools to adapt to what their kids actually need. But when policy 28 credits says you will require a kid to get 28 credits to graduate, that kind of puts a restriction on what we can adapt to as the changes need.
So what are going to be the casualties? If, you know, we progress with this over the next 4 years, what things are we going to see disappear? Or people are we going to see disappear?
You're going to see both, because you're going to look for efficiencies, just like industry does. But the number one focus isn't going to be just people. The number one focus is where do we find our efficiencies? And it's a PLC district. It's time to have those hard conversations. If we have small class sizes, can that be adapted? I mean, the other part that I also brought out is we have some schools that are less than 50% capacity, okay, educational capacity, according to, again, a math formula. And they said, well, that doesn't work. Well, again, those formulas are our facilities. We can grow. We can do some things. But I guess I wouldn't reference them as casualties. I would reference them right now as efficiencies. We need to look for efficiencies. Here's a casualty on my point. A casualty is if we don't get our salaries up where we're competitive, we as a district find a way to recruit and get kids, get people in, there's a point in time where we won't offer, be able to offer a core class or offer a class because the pool to pull from is just non-existent for employment. That's a casualty to not. We continue to do the same thing we've done for the last 27 years and not try to take these challenges on from a different perspective. The real casualty will be when we can't recruit and put people in positions for positions we need. And that competitive piece is going to be really hard.
But another aspect of this is, as teachers retire or choose to relocate, those are going to be some of the things that help us make the decision about which programs stay and which offerings we keep or which ones go away. And the other major factor is students drive the schedule for us. So when the students say which courses they wish to study next semester, that's going to point and say, here's where the student interest is. These are the classes that have the most demand.
So you can't mess with core classes because they're required and so on. So
and that I want to take it deeper than that. They're called basket of goods. So the state requires you that there are certain basket of goods that have to be provided through that graduation. We reference them as core. So when, in some cases, a program can't go away because it's required. It's a core class that has to be offered.
Okay. Can you give me an example of
math, English, social studies, science, some of those cores that are offered and some of those others that used to have curriculum too. But again, if just as an example, for one of these core classes, I know that there were several of those positions open around the state. Okay. There are several schools that couldn't fill those positions because the pool might have been, I'm just going to use random numbers. There were 15. And actually, there were only 8 applicants that had to be divided among 15 schools in the state of Wyoming for this position. Okay, well, what do you think that recruiting tool was for those 8 people that were applying? This is a real story. Well, I'll consider you if you'll give me a $5,000 bonus. Okay, what does that do to culture when you pay somebody $5,000 to come to Buffalo who's been here for 15 years? I mean, those are all the things that we have to remember is I think the real casualty of this is if we don't start adjusting and getting to a point where we can be competitive, those classes that we not only have to offer, but we can offer because we're not competitive, that's going to be the bigger challenge of Johnson County.
So spooling forward, one of the things that I've heard several times in school district conversations is that we're anticipating a budget decrease. So not only, you know, that's going to make things even harder than maybe they are now. Is that correct? And what is the cause of that?
So as you watched in the slideshows, since over the course of time, we're going to be down almost 200. If we continue the same plateau with our grade levels coming up and not an increase in our community, we're going to be down almost 225 to 250 students.
Okay, and so just to explain that, that's partly because we have an older population that is not producing children, and we don't have housing for younger families. Absolutely. And so we are keeping younger families out. And also, is population size going down too?
So the population is actually consistent with the gentleman that's doing the research. So the population hasn't had a major spike or a major decline. It's had its ebb and flows. I mean, this is the statistician that's doing the...
Sure, the counties.
But we're also seeing less students enrolled in traditional public education.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think that's statewide. But again, you hit the key. 50% of our population in Johnson County is 50 or older.
So the demographics are changing some, and that's part of what's driving these numbers we're looking at.
Okay. But going to this other issue, which is that not every eligible student-aged child in the county is in the public school system, and we've seen an increase in numbers. What is Johnson County School District going to do about that? Because the money, what we know is that the students enrolled equals money to then spend on everybody. And so the more students you have, the better off the school district is, and the more you can
so there's several things that we're doing. First one is we're trying to improve our communication and get out there so that what we're doing great to recruit. But the reality is we're doing this right now by saying we're not the only show in town. That's a hard conversation to have. Okay. The reality is to say we're not the only show or not the only option that parents have. is a rethink of public education. 20 years ago, it was easy to say we're the best show in town because you're the only show in town. Now it's about who are we competing with? So we've got to change our mentality or our approach to we have to compete with other entities now for public education.
And do you have a plan in place for kind of exploring what the issues are, what
so, attracts other...
And so again, the number one competition you've seen is those competitions require less to get a diploma.
Do you think that actually somebody says, oh, I could do this on 24 credits or I could do it on 28? I wonder whether that's it or whether people are looking more holistically at what do I experience? You know, I experience great
first
teachers.
First of all, path of least resistance is human nature.
Yes.
I'm going to be very clear. There are some that say, hey, there's more to get that. But the path of least resistance is how do I get, because we are in a society and kids and human nature is, again, what's the competition? What does the competition offer? Because they're selling it. It's not because we're selling it. They're saying, look, it, we can get you the same opportunity. This is what you have to do. This is all you have to do to get this. So you got to remember, competition is, they're not out there saying, oh, by the way, they're competing with us too. But you are correct in saying we have to come across what we're trying to say is we offer the best product. Okay, that's what we have to try to do.
So you could argue that by chipping away at electives, which presumably, well, I mean, we've discussed would probably have to happen, but that by chipping away at electives, you are actually making the things that you can't get in an alternative education environment, like homeschool, for example, you are diminishing those and therefore you're reducing the attractiveness of the public school setting.
Well, the first one of those that I want to challenge us a little bit is that they can't get electives in a homeschool environment. We have multiple students walk right into our schools and say, I'm
and that's exactly electives. My point, that then when if yes. you reduce the number of electives, you're actually arguably making yourself less attractive. You're shaking your head, why?
Completely disagree.
Okay. It's a quantity and quality okay. question as well. Yeah. If the time and effort you put into the 24 credits gets you a deeper, richer understanding of the subjects you've studied, instead of spreading out your time over the 28 minimum requirement, then there really is a question of how much did you learn in some of these? Did you get your time's worth? Did you get a good return on investment? Or can we do better to focus additional
effort? And I suppose that would be an additional point to your remarks earlier about the 7 to 8 period day that you cram in so much. But if you did a little bit less, maybe it would be done better and with a
I hate to come across this way, but I'm gonna be transparent. Chipping away at electives. I'm a CTE teacher, so I get fired up when we say we're chipping away at something that I had a passion. That's what I started my teaching with. It has nothing to do with that. Kids come to programs where programs are successful because about what you offer and what you provide. Okay.
And whether it fits their
needs. Yeah. But again, to take something because it's not what your need is, but just to take something to be taking. We have kids that say, hey, I don't want this, but this is what's required. I want kids to focus on what their real intent is and be productive in that. This requires us to look at, are we putting, where are our efficiencies? It might be with classes that are smaller, absolutely. And that might be an elective class, but that might not be an elective class. That might be some different things that we have to look at. It's really not about, and everybody in the simple world says, well, it's just about taking away electives. Theoretically, it's about kids' choice. Travis just said that. We try to develop our kids around their interest and where they're at. So if we are really doing a good job of that, and we find tracks for it, those programs will even get better. Instead of spreading it out and say, oh, we have a small number here, a small number there. I think the hard conversation comes back to the reflection of, kids will go to programs where they know they're beneficial and there's quality instruction.
And it's a stepping stone onto something else that they want to do. It's a building brick to something new. So let's just take a little look at the electives that are offered across the high schools right now. What kind of things are kids open to and what kind of things are they doing? And do you see big groups of some kids in, you know, one particular type of elective, or is it pretty much spread across the board, or is it because there are so many credits that are required that everybody's just sort of throwing themselves at everything just to make up the credit requirement?
I'm going to say you said everything right there. There's strong groups of kids that are in a big, but that comes back to the program and the instruction and what are the kids like. There are programs where I've heard, again, we're just taking it because it's a credit to meet graduation requirements, okay, where their focus would be, this is my love for business, this is my love for ag, this is where it is. Again, allowing kids will have to make choices. Let's not be realistic. But if we're teaching them life skills, life skill is about choices, okay? I want to do this, this, and this, okay? Well, there's only so much time in the day. There's so much here. What is your focus? And I think that's our job as a public education and along with parents to say, look, let's become true masters of what you want to do instead of just being average in some different things. And I know it's like that young age, but even in college, how many college students actually finish with the degree that they started? Not very many. Okay, over 50% over the first 2 years switch their what? their degree because they don't like what they're doing. So colleges are about choices. High school are about choices.
You could argue that they're actually changing their degree because they realize they'd like something else more. It doesn't have
possibly
to be a negative.
It could be positive or negative, but the point is it changes regularly.
Yep.
But I want to push back a little bit on the whittling away thing. In a PLC district, we have both enrichments and interventions.
So describe what those are to people who may not.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know. You're drenched now in school district training.
Yes, so
maybe parlay those things across.
Yeah. So here's a great example of an enrichment. If a student is performing very well in all their classes at the high school, we heard last night a couple of options would be: I'm going to offer a 3-week make a fishnet in wood shop class that may not be for a credit, but will get you experience to learn to run the machines necessary for this one project and discover if you have a love of the wood shop. Same thing with throwing clay. So for students that are performing well, their enrichment is a chance for them to go take a short duration, but go explore the different opportunities out there that they might not be able to invest an entire semester in, but they could go take 3 or 4 in that same semester and learn some things about themselves and their loves. So that's a possibility.
I understand that. So that also it requires an instructor, a teacher,
mm-hmm.
Who is there. And that teacher needs to have not only the time, but they also need to be reimbursed and adequately paid for that. Do those things all line up in this plan?
What a neat dovetail. If we have classes that are low enrollment, but really producing great results, if we can tag them in with some of these additional students for an enrichment to get those numbers up in that same course, then all of a sudden we can bring those numbers up, get some additional experience to many students, and make sure that the teachers have the right number of people in the class to carry on teaching that one.
So do we have a vision, Charles, do you have a vision in your mind of how you think in 4 years' time our two high schools, we'll set aside New West at the moment because they have a different credit requirement, although my understanding is that you're going to be visiting that as part of the motion that the board passed last night. But how will things look differently in 4 years' time than they do now in the high schools?
Because I'm going to direct leadership to go back to their buildings and be innovative with what our kids needs and fit within our parameters. So to answer what that is, we're going to be meeting the needs of the kids according to the times. And hopefully we're going to be adjusting to the state requirements that are going to come down potentially with the new profile of a graduate. So it's going to look different because we're going to not allow policy to dictate what we can and can't do. It's going to allow our experts in our buildings to be flexible enough to adjust to the changing needs and the competition that we have. So to say specifically what it is, I'm going to say we're going to be better than the high-performing districts that we just looked at because we're going to find our niches and still be considered a high-performing district. So I'm going to say with the people that we have and the potential we have, we're going to be one of those districts that people are coming to look at us and say, how did you make those changes?
And what are the implications for staff? We're talking about a lot of change. And what are the implications for staff?
The reality, whether it's staff or whether it's programs or whether it's software, we're going to have to find efficiencies in order to live within our means. And the implications for that is I want it to be a process of attrition rather than a process of a rift because we haven't been proactive and then created a circumstance where we had to be reactive. And I ultimately want to say I want to stay from stay away from option Z, which is implementing a RIF policy.
And what is a RIF policy for those people?
That's a reduction in force because we don't have the funds to support them.
Okay, so essentially enforced redundancy of staff. You'd have to eliminate staff positions because there wasn't enough money to go around.
Yep, yes. Absolutely.
And that's the worst case scenario. We're going to do everything in our power to proactively
allow buildings. You know your staff. You know who are teachers. You know how long they've been teachers for. You know who's nearing retirement. You may even have got some qualitative data about what individual teachers' life plans are and where they see. Can you achieve these things naturally just by the sequence of the years passing by and natural attrition and people choosing to move on and do different things?
If we are intentionally looking at efficiencies and using any type of natural attrition, the answer is yes.
Yes.
So I'd like to go back to the decision that was made last night.
Sure. Travis.
You've described that it was begun in 2015, long before any of us were involved in this endeavor. And obviously, it's been through various different iterations, looking at various different pieces that comprise this whole. But what has been the process? What has been the process of late? Has there been a consultation? What has informed the board? The board is largely comprised, although it's changing immediately, but there are some teachers on the board. But on the whole, you're really just individuals who are interested in the well-being and the education of young people in our district, not educators and especially not administrators. How did you go about the process of informing your decision?
Well, Mitch Kraft did a lot of work with us and for us. He did a lot of the studies, and then he came back and told us what he was learning, how he had figured out the best way we could move forward to match what these high-performing districts are doing. So we basically brought in experts, and some of the experts were in-house. A lot of our real talented admin team came and helped us understand what we were facing in terms of teachers' numbers about to reach retirement age, their needs in their different buildings. So we literally had the superintendent round up every expert he could get in front of us and had them.
So those are external. Yes. Those are external sources taking a dispassionate, objective look. What about actually talking to students, staff, parents, other community stakeholders? What was the process?
I'll speak to that. Because that conversation has come to the table. But asking kids in a relevance that don't know any...
There's no context for them to understand,
right? At some point in time, there's a trust value that comes into when we are as educators and we're professionals, that if anybody doubts that there's a passion, there's not a passion to do what's best for the district, then I need to do a better job of saying, as a superintendent, you need to understand that as professionals, it's just kind of like a parent. Okay, I don't mean to say it in this tent, but when my kids didn't like what I had to say, but I'm the one that had the experience and the knowledge to do it, it's kind of like a parenting. So part of the process is kids will be involved because now they say, okay, what is my intention? What is my focus? What do I really want to do? But when you go to a kid or to somebody who doesn't understand the full picture of that, we're trying to keep the district moving in an upward motion and not an upward motion. Sometimes that survey, how do you get quality data when they don't understand all the components behind it? So yes, there is that. What do the parents and the community want? That's coming. That's down the road.
Part of the policy discussions.
Because this is the parameters. This is me being transparent to the public and to the taxpayers of saying, you've given us this amount of money. Now we need you to help us understand what is critical so that we can try to provide those needs for those pieces. I mean, yes, it's all about where we live and it's about getting input from parents and getting some different things. But in this stage, in how many people really have a true understanding of the complexity of where I can simplify it by saying, look at, I can tell you that the amount of money that we're going to receive, if and when the economy crashes, which we know we're in a boom and bust, We can also show you that ADM drives funding and it's going
down. And ADM is?
Average daily membership or students. The number of students is going down.
And that impacts the amount of money that is triggered into a school district.
And it's not just for teachers. That's the amount of money I get to keep the building lights on. That's the amount of money I get to help maintain buildings, not fix, because there's major maintenance. I mean, that's how complex it is. So when you start talking about some different things that we do, is there's a certain point in time in leadership where you say, look at, these are the uncontrollables. However, here's your parameters. Now, parents, students, and building leadership and teachers, you come together, you innovate within your means to do what's best for our kids and our community based on accountability. So that all come, that is the next stage. That is the next stage of people saying, really, what do we want our kids to do? Okay, this is the parameters. This is what we want to do. If as a community, you want to say, we're going to keep our salaries lower so that we can keep the same programs, then that's what it will be. But
and what is going to be the process for which those decisions are made? Is there complexity?
So the complexity of that is that comes back to building leadership saying, look, here's our challenges. This is what we have for staff. This is what we have certified in. We have to be creative.
And it'll look different building to building.
Yep.
Each one of the buildings is going to have to use the talents and inventiveness of their staff and their facilities to make the changes as we start reducing number of teachers. So,
and it might come down to our K-5 might have to have shared staff. You might have to have a half-time teacher in this building. No, core teacher, because electives are already shared. All right. It comes back to, you know, and I know this is a hot topic, but there's some electives that are now K-12 in other districts our side because they couldn't find anybody, where most of the time we want one elective for every two buildings. I mean, that's where that creativity comes into. First of all, we have to know what we have to work with, what our talents are, but some of that's going to come back to shared staff.
There are a lot of challenges that you're describing. Challenge means change. Change often has a knock on morale. How is that going to be addressed?
Yeah, it makes me sick to have that discussion. But the reality is I get that. I get the reality.
I mean, you yourself, you mentioned you've been a CTE teacher. I mean, yep. You know exactly what
I know exactly.
Means.
It's a competitive. But again, everybody thinks public education, there's an unlimited amount of funds in the bucket. And the reality is there is not.
Well, there are some people who say that public education is way overfunded already. You're describing something slightly different in the reality here in Johnson County right now. Those kids that are not currently in the public school system seem to be quite critical to impacting the well-being of what comes next. Because we know that students enrolled equals money. It's just a very simple equation. Do we know where those students are missing from? Do they tip out at the high school level, or are they just missing all the way through the various grades? What do we know?
I'm going to say it's probably pretty level all the way across. I'm going to say what we're doing with our parent liaison and what we're doing with our early childhood program to get parents into the community or into the building to see all the great things we're having. Plus the parent liaison is, it's for all families, is connecting them with the school. It's going to see a huge impact because we've seen some of that is starting out early and not getting them until later. And then there was that struggle of getting them in later. And then once they get into school, then that struggle came back to, oh, we're going to go back when things get tough at the upper levels or credits are involved. So I see a flux in and out, but this is part of the book study. So if nobody's done this, I think the trust and inspire, our culture has changed since COVID. That's one thing that people are not really wrapping their head around. Sometimes this isn't just about competition. This is sometimes about how our world has changed. We have more parents that are mobile now with their working and able to work remotely. And in some cases, their ability to take their kids with them and go do things and do their homework remotely becomes another competitor that we're not going to compete with.
And also the world of alternative education and way of delivering a high school diploma has also equally grown sophisticated. I mean, COVID pushed that forward. It was something that was already beginning to kind of gain some traction, but it really,
absolutely,
I mean, COVID lit a fire underneath that, and there are so many different offerings. I think it's an individual question that parents and students and teachers need to ask themselves as to, you know, what is the quality of that, of that, like, is you technically may be learning it, but what else are you not receiving? But also, what are you receiving? I mean, there are pros and cons to both, and the public school system per se needs to be presenting itself in a much more marketed fashion.
And to that point, that's another one of the things we've been working real hard on is, we've got amazing things happening in our buildings. Our students are phenomenally successful when they leave here. But a lot of people in the community don't know that. If you don't have a student in the district and you're not entering these buildings, in a lot of cases, they don't know the great things happening. So we've contracted an actual marketing expert to come in and train us.
Okay, so that's
in the marketing of our product.
Do we see all of that in scores as well? I mean, is that reflected in the achievement of students?
I guess I'm going to need some help with that one.
It's, well, so you said we've got all these amazing things happening.
So we are seeing that. Yeah. And the number of scholarships we had last year was one of our real crowning glories. So we had enough students perform high enough that they ended up with some big scholarship numbers in the last graduating class. So, yeah, we're seeing that. And we've also got some really neat, where are they now? We heard recently from the high school team about we've got BHS graduates working at NASA. We have BHS graduates working at Microsoft and all kinds of interesting, I might misquote which of the amazing companies, but they're all out there and all over. So that's happening. But I learned that for the first time, having been on the board 2 years, in a conversation we had a month ago at BHS. So these things are there and they're real, but nobody knows it. That's not in the building. So that's why we brought in the marketing team to teach us how to take that out there and push that, because we really do have the best team to educate students, and the great things happening are here, but it's really confined in our little silos.
But our conversation is focused on reduction as well. So we're not going to have so many of those things going forward.
No, we will. Again, I want to come back to efficiencies. This isn't about taking away the good things and the things that are flourishing. This is talking about where the efficiencies need to be. I get what the public is saying, and I get what everybody else is saying, but I have to come back to this piece. These other districts, their kids are flourishing too. Okay. We're just trying to set parameters. So those kids that Travis just talked about, if we got programs that kids are going to and flourishing, and those would be the last programs that are on the, what we call the chipping away block. The chipping away block comes to looking at where are our efficiencies and where are some of the struggles. And more importantly, if it is a struggle, then what are we doing to help it? But again, the chipping block, whether it's the high end or whether it's I'm going to say the CTE is the high end, because that's where we want kids to be.
CTE, please.
Career technical education.
Okay, so that's sort of non-college bound is the way to describe that. It's going into some kind of work.
But they're trade school bound. They're trade school bound, and some of those pieces were at. But even in the CTE courses, that's an engineer. Those are
well,
different things.
I mean, let's face it, in this world of unknowns with AI in the mix, the world of work is changing fundamentally too.
Absolutely.
And people who can literally fix things that machines can't fix and do those sorts of things are going to be very valuable.
And maybe the help is that we can have with this. It's not about just saying, oh, electives are going away. I think maybe more of the terminology needs to be used is, we're looking for the efficiencies that need to happen. If you have a high performing program, why would we even consider that to be one of the things we're doing? We're going to work our hearts out to make sure that we keep high performing programs, or kids that are benefiting, or kids that are trying to go to NASA or whatever. And some of those are core classes. So the keeping, let's wrap this back.
Yeah, you're going to need your math for NASA.
Yeah.
So the reality is those courses that are those kiddos we're talking about that are working in those programs, wasn't just about any type of elective or career technical education. They had to have a solid core background in order to qualify to get into those things. That means we've got to find a way to make sure that we keep our core teachers, those programs filled with quality people. If we're going to look at the big picture of the celebrations Travis is talking about, that's just not your career technical education. That's not your elective classes. Those are the teachers that we know. We have some master teachers, and that comes back to professional learning communities.
Yes.
Getting our master teachers in front of young teachers so that they can teach their trade, because education is kind of a trade, and grow them into the point that when, because everybody wants to retire. I mean, that is ultimately our goal. We all want to retire, travel the world, and find out that retirement is really you work harder than you did when you were in the real world. So as we go to those pieces, those things that we're talking about with celebrations, we got to come back around. That's because of our core teachers too, because they don't get into those high level courses without the core teachers. They don't get into it without the, whether it's math, science, English, or whatever, and then some of those benefits. But I guess the terminology that I would like parents to hear is this isn't all just about electives. This is about finding efficiencies in all programs and having that hard conversation. This is a program we can't support because it does come down to an economy of scale. It really does. We would love to offer a course, but if only one or two kids are interested in that course, the cost efficiency of that is something where we could put more where there's 60 kids in and support that piece. So really, it's a way of saying not, because I'll be the last guy that says as a vocational teacher that those are the first courses are going to be. I mean, let's be real. The conversation is, well, the superintendent's mandate has mandated to cut the ag and the FFA programs. I grew up on a ranch. I've been in Johnson County all my life. This community is based around the ag community. For people to even think that that would even be a thought process for me would be just the opposite. If our ag program is not thriving, then it comes back to, do we have the right people in the right places to make that program thrive?
But an example of some of this adaptability and flexibility that we're talking about to find efficiencies was, it was pointed out recently that when the shop teachers had to be gone for any reason, the students would go there and they couldn't operate any machines because they didn't have a teacher there that was authorized to let them fire up the machines and do any work. So a bunch of teachers, from core teachers and other parts of the building that had some time, have gone in and got themselves taught enough that they can now go cover for the shop teachers and the kids can continue working on their projects. So that's just one little example of how the different teachers are coming together to solve these problems in building. We don't have to go out and bring in another teacher for that shop. We're covering it in-house.
Which is a whole nother conversation, that we've hired our sub pool.
Yes.
So finding sub to cover teachers is becoming even harder than it used to be. We increased our sub pay to be more competitive, but when you hire your sub pool to be teachers, so it's not only the pot of teachers that are available that coming out of the schools, we've also got people on transitionals. We got people
in transitionals.
A transitional means that they're not officially certified, but they have 1 year to complete their program. We're helping support that. So the creativity of just actually finding teachers to be in a position where they're certified to teach the class is becoming even more.
And we've discussed before this other end of the pointy stick, which is that there aren't enough teachers becoming trained, coming into and staying in school districts. They may qualify and they may do a year, two, three, or whatever, and then they give up and they go back into some kind of other kind of business. So there's another issue driving difficulty from a different direction.
When the national trend is probably close to 50% of the teachers after their third or fourth year are leaving the business, that's hard to compete with.
So as we wrap up what's been a very broad-ranging conversation, going back to where we started. Yes, we do. So there was this recommendation was made by the superintendent. The board has now unanimously accepted it. What happens next and what's the time frame?
Well, actually, the journey is just, it's restarted again. Now, here's where we're at. I have a specific focus voted on by the board that says we will take my recommendation into consideration and to revisit policies and make it happen. So now it's a collaborative piece between building leaderships. It also gives buildings the opportunity to start saying, hey, this is real. Let's start looking at what our schedules are and putting policies into place.
So what are the policies that are, is there a large number of policies? I remember seeing a chart that I think you showed recently, Charles, about how many policies there are now. Everything seems to be under a policy of some sort or other. What are we really talking about?
So
here?
Yes, so I did show you. So it's, if we did three policies every board meeting, take 14 years to go through all the policies. We don't have to go through all those. We're going to go through graduation requirements. So graduation policy will be number one. And so there's two policies currently on the table. There's one for New West and there's one that applies to BHS and KC. So the first one will be impact is that overall one that reduces from 28 to 24, because those are the only two schools that impacts. But in fairness and consistency, we will also look at, you know, is New West where they're at, how it fits into that. Does going from 28 to 24 impact or does that support? You know, we're going to have the special ed director involved in this because we got kids on IEP. So just revisiting that policy.
Okay.
That,
and to be clear, New West currently has a graduation requirement of 20.
Yes.
So that is also so up those, for discussion.
Yes. But and the discussion is revisit. I mean, the whole key word is we want to revisit. I think a lot of times the mistakes that make are not in non-performing districts is they just focus on one and they forget to focus on everything that ties to it. So this is a great opportunity to bring professionals together and say, is this actually what we're doing? Kind of like accreditation. They come in and say, what are you, this is what you say you're doing. Are you actually doing it? So let's put policy to what we're actually doing. So we got graduation number one. And then another extension of that is our wellness. And here's the reason why wellness, because in our wellness policy, it specifically talks about the number of minutes that are required for physical education or what do I want to say? Activity.
Physically okay. active.
Physically active. So again, that ties, there's a little sentence in there that ties to, you know, what are we doing? Well, in our graduation policy, we're going to change PE requirements from 2 to 1.5, which is the recommendation of the PE teachers to give flexibility. We got to look at that policy.
So that would give you a half credit back out of your 28 down to 24.
Precisely.
Yes, absolutely. But it gives you, a half credit back, but the PE teachers have a whole creative thing of how they're going to, you know, they're going to have kids doing other things. It's just not specifically PE.
It will be an elective too.
It could be an elective. Yes. So you're getting some options there. But then that policy connects to early graduation. That's another one. So we're going to take a look at early graduation. I said wellness.
Yes.
Early graduation, wellness. And just a regular graduation policy, okay, is those are the three main ones. And then anything else, and anytime you're doing reconstruction, revisiting, I call it digging up bones. If we find another policy.
And we will.
That ties to it, we'll revisit those. But those are the three main ones.
And does this have any impact at all on extracurricular activities?
No.
Not even financially. There's no budget impact of any of this, because you could think that, you know, you could make up some monies from taking money from activities and putting them into.
Already have.
Okay.
Well, that's already been, we've done that and we'll continue to work on that.
And there's no more to be pilfered.
Well, it depends on how good we are at kicking off a Buffalo booster program. If we had a bunch of booster clubs supporting.
So to answer the question, there is always that potential.
Yeah.
There's always potential with innovation. All right. There's always a potential worth revisiting. However, when we say, is there more potential in how that impacts activities? We all know in this room that when 85% of our kids participate in activities, and we've already went from 200% over the model to 125% over the model, we're already seeing to try to support those kids. However, I want to come back to what I said. With the support of the community, with innovation, there is a potential through activities to provide more funding back to the general fund.
How does that work?
What's that?
How would that work?
Because right now, the 125% or 135%, that 30% is coming out of the general fund to support activities above and beyond what the general fund, what the state produces. So if you're going to get closer, and we looked at that too. I want to be very clear to everybody. Charles just didn't come in and say, oh, by the way, so we've been looking at activities and where other districts fall and including them. Some of those fall within that 125 to 140% over the model, which is kind of a variable that we look at. So again, reducing from 200% over the model and reducing that down. We've been fortunate. We've got a couple ECAs to kind of mitigate that a little bit. But the reality is we've already done some of those things that people haven't seen.
Well, that's a lot of information to digest. Clearly, there's a lot of decisions still to be made.
Haven't even talked about curriculum assessment alignment, that all is impacted with this. We haven't talked about state accountability. So, yes. So maybe we can do some more conversations.
Well, clearly there is more conversations to be had. But thank you very much to you both for really digging down and explaining a lot more about the issue and why it's come forward and how the decision.
Can I say two more things?
Please do.
To end this, this was actually, we have done a lot up to this point. So we've also went out and exceed federal grants. We put everything, we went out and made sure that our federal grants are being spent appropriately to support kids. Are we using those effectively? So when people say, oh, you're just doing this, we've been trying to find ways, efficiency. So are we using our federal grants appropriately? Have we pushed everybody out of the COVID funds to where it's in our general funds? So this isn't, it is about activities. It is about curriculum. There's a lot of things, but I want people to understand this isn't the first thing that we've already looked at. We've been looking at efficiencies for 2 years. Now we just come to the point where, guess what? We've kind of squeezed as much out of the lemon as we can. So we have to take a look at the size of the lemon. Okay. All right.
Well, thank you very much indeed for your time and for really explaining so many details behind these decisions. Thank you.
Thanks, Kate.
No, thank you. Can't wait for the next one.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.